Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Visit wholefoodsmarket.com or download the Whole Foods Market app to learn more and find the store nearest to you.
We asked our hosts what Heritage Radio Network means to them. Listen in to hear what they had to say.
Hi, everybody. This is Carrie Diamond, host of Radio Cherry Bomb, and I'm here to tell you why I love Heritage Radio. It's all Dave Tatasciore. 100%. It's what keeps me coming back. Every Thursday, I pretend it's the pizza. I pretend it's the bomb squad. But it's Dave.
Do your part to keep Heritage Radio Network alive by supporting our summer drive at heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
Greetings and welcome to Animal Instinct here on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Celia Kutcher, also known as the Food Healer, and today is going to be my last show of the season. I will be back next season. However, I've got two more episodes left, and I'm going to have Ada Neves, who is, oh my God, I don't even know what to call you, like Animal Renaissance Woman, is going to be doing the show for the next 2 weeks. So make sure you tune in. She's super fun. She's wonderful. She knows lots and lots of stuff, and she can help you possibly make your dog famous. So...
Ooh, I'm flattered.
Ooh.
Woof, woof.
I tell ya, that doesn't happen all the time. It's never happened to me before. Boom.
It's magic.
Thanks, David.
That's magic, my engineer.
So, I am talking with Denise Herman today. We're going to be talking about generalized anxiety and phobia in dogs, but we do have Ada in the studio with us, so we might drag her in for a question or an answer at some point. Denise, how are you?
I am well. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. And Ada, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm so excited. I'm psyched to have you both. And this is a topic that I think is one that's really misunderstood and one that I think is more complicated than most people like to think it is. A lot of people think that, you know, if a dog is stressed out, if you, like, discipline it or something, that this will help, especially with phobias. So, Denise, how common do you see anxiety and phobia in the dogs that you work with?
Well, a lot of the time. I mean, it can come out in a lot of different ways. Sometimes, fear and phobia can come out as aggression. Mm. But a lot of times it really, you know, when people say fear and phobia, they're usually referring to the kind where the dog is sort of mentally decompensating and physically a hot mess, a wreck, you mm-hmm. know, from any number of various things. So, yeah, it can be on a lot of things. And I know we're going to touch on some of those a little bit later. But it's not uncommon. Dogs, you know, are trying to process the world in a different way than we do. And they have different capabilities for it. So when things are scary, they're trying to make sense of that. And it's not as easy for them to understand, why are you walking me past this giant screaming, slapping, horrible, loud noise yeah. hole in the ground? And we're like, it's a construction site. It won't hurt you.
Yeah, totally.
And it's like, bam, 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 bam. And they don't know. Or under the train. Or like, why are people shooting off, you know, loud, noisy things mm-hmm. right outside of our window? And mm-hmm. why is the sky falling and there's thunder and lightning? So they're just trying to process that. And they don't, you know, empathetically, I like to say, they don't really know that they're not about to die.
Yeah, it's true, you know, because it's also like just telling your dog, like, it's fireworks doesn't mean anything.
Yeah,
it's,
they're like, nah, nah, nah.
It's like very helpful.
The dog is like, what's happening?
Like, the world's coming to an end. It's cool. You're fine, you know?
Yeah, and then the misconception, which is so funny that you would say this, and I know we might talk about it later, but that idea where people are like, well, don't pacify them or comfort them if they're upset. You're going to make it worse.
Yeah, what is that?
And it's very misguided. The idea that you can reinforce fear by being nice or giving the dog something good or trying to comfort it. It's almost, I think, I feel like it's rooted in some, like, bootstrapping child rearing stuff, ultimately, where
it's
people
like
are
German
like
German child rearing.
It is, right? A little like, I'll give you something to cry about.
And totally.
It's like, no, they're already, you know, dogs are not really trying to get one over on you, and you're not going to make it worse by trying to comfort them. You may very well not make it better, and it's just getting worse on its own.
Yeah.
But you really can't do harm doing that, despite what people might lead you to believe.
Well, I mean, it's a funny idea because, I mean, I'm a wimp. I'll admit it on radio. I can't handle scary movie commercials. I'm the one, like, literally, like, with my hands over my ears going, da-da-da-da-da, listening, or, like, with my eyes closed. And, like, when I get scared, which, I mean, it takes a lot to get me there, but once I am, I need someone to be like, it's okay, you know?
Yeah, well, I started to have a lot of empathy for my other dog when she didn't like her nails clipped, and I started to realize when I go to the person, the manicurist, and I get the pedicure,
yeah,
I am flinching when they are clipping my I don't even let them do it anymore, and I thought, oh my God, my poor dog, and I know that these people are not trying to cut my toes off.
Yeah, totally.
And yet I can't not be like, oh, you got me. And I get all very scared. And I'm like, of course. Well, you know, dogs, they're constantly like, I humor, you know, in funny way. Yeah. I try to think sometimes. I'm like, they're probably just going through their day going, my mom tries to kill me all day long.
Yeah, totally.
And I try to avoid it. She just doesn't understand.
Well, I had a dog psychic on, an animal psychic one time, and they told me that the biggest issue that dogs and cats have is the fact that nobody ever tells them what's going on. So their entire day is basically guesswork of what's going to happen, which,
well,
I found kind of amusing.
That is true. I mean, it is that dogs and cats, I'm sure, the same way. They are trying to figure out what predicts what because they don't have language the same way we do.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes people say dogs do really well to have a routine, and you have to have a routine. But the fact is that dogs can have, the routine could be no routine, and if that's what they're used to, then that's okay too. But certainly one of the things a lot of people talk about, and it's true, is that when dogs who have fear or anxiety issues, when presented with the thing that makes them upset, especially in cases where it has something to do with other people or strangers, mm-hmm. they like to have a script that they can follow mm-hmm. so that they know it's going to go down the same way every single time. And it's a way that you've constructed that's safe for them and that they can follow without having to feel like they're threatened and they have to either retaliate or flee or just melt down.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
so I would say that is a helpful thing.
I always say that it's like having a toddler. You create
true.
A routine
it's true.
And teach them through that. And they learn. They capture very quick the idea of how that goes.
I think, too, that, you know, so much of it is just assumptions that people make with, you know, or they'll, like, try to, I'm not going to remember the word. When you put human emotions on an animal. Anthropomorphize. Yeah. Thank you. 5 points. Yes.
Exactly. Ding, ding, ding.
Like, yeah. Woo! All right.
Wow.
We got some new toys in the studio, apparently.
I see that.
Oh, Ada, you're in trouble the next 2 weeks. I can see
Oh, my
already.
God. I won't be able to talk. It's going to be like little the sounds all the time.
Talking about anxiety. But no, a lot of people anthropomorphize and will be like, you know, A because of B, because of C, because of D for their animals. And it's like, in some cases, that can evolve to that. But a lot of times, it's just like loud noise scary.
Yeah, I mean, it's natural for a lot of animals to be scared by loud noises because it makes sense. Loud, sudden things that you're not used to might kill you more than a loud noise that you're used to already. So most of this stuff is, you know, for animals, being more afraid typically is more adaptive than being like, whatever, let me just jump into this unknown puddle, this, like, big thing. Or let me, you know, there's the sound of a tree falling, let me go get under it.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't make sense. Being more afraid will generally keep you alive longer in the wild. So it makes sense that that's
makes
a trait that they still carry over.
So, like, what are some of the typical phobias that dogs have?
Strangers. I mean, strangers is the biggest one. And, you know, you could say fear, you could say phobia. There's not a big, giant distinction in behavior terms a lot of times between fear and phobia, except how it comes out, like I said before. Like, does it come out as the dog being reactive and trying to drive the scary thing away,
mm-hmm.
or do they shut down?
Mm-hmm.
And either way, the quality of life for the dog is not great if they're constantly confronted with that and it's not, you know, diffused. One of the things I try to encourage people when we're talking about something where the dog is upset, They're not just like, I'm grabbing a turkey sandwich off the counter. It's not that. It's not that kind of behavior problem. It's the dog is legitimately worried about something. Whether we've determined it's an actual threat or not does not matter.
Right.
They've decided for them that it is. You have to treat it that way. And I tell people, in that context, you want to think about diffusing the problem.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to just squash it out. You want to go, let's look at this and see if we can't, you know, get the dog used to it. When appropriate, get them used to it at a less intense level, pairing it with something good. You know, the old school classical conditioning.
Yeah.
Putting, you know, something good while the other thing is sort of happening at a distance away. But for a lot of things, for certain phobias, that's not feasible. Like fireworks necessarily, thunderstorms. You really can't desensitize well to thunderstorms and fireworks. Thunderstorms specifically because there's so many parts to the package that you can't mimic those parts reliably. And then you can't protect the dog. And these are two key things that you need to do good desensitization. You can't protect the dog from other occurrences outside of the realm of your practice. So I might be working on thunder with my dog. Even if I had, you know, sounds of thunder and it sounded similar to my dog, which you can't convince me it sounds the same to them.
Yeah, totally.
But then we're going to have a thunderstorm and all of my progress is blown out of the water. So because I can't control that, I can't be like, now you thunder, you quiet down out there. So you can't really desensitize to some things. You have to try to manage around it. And then the things you can desensitize to, you can work with. I'm trying to think of what other things they're typically afraid of. You know, I was just thinking about the thunder and the fireworks because we just went through that
totally.
You know, earlier in July and all the thunderstorms start and we're still deep in the thunderstorm part. And I always send out stuff to my clients about fireworks near the 4th of July, New Year's Eve, and then even some other holidays around there where people like to shoot off fireworks.
Can I ask something please. Here? How can you identify when the fear is not a genetic problem from a behavioral problem?
Well, I would say this, that you almost don't have to, because you can look at what's coming out of the dog, and however it got there, it's there now. So, you know, genetically, you might be able to say genetically that some dogs will absorb these occurrences and react more poorly than others, and you might be able to say, well, that dog genetically is at a disadvantage for dealing with these things. But I wouldn't necessarily say that he's genetically predisposed absolutely to have it. Mm-hmm. Like I've had, you know, you have several dogs. So you know that you're the same mom ostensibly to all those dogs, and yet they are each radically different from the other.
Different personalities.
And they're absolutely. And one of the more progressive things that we talk about now in dog training and in sheltering as well is that to really define the dog as an individual. And to treat them as an individual and to try not to make generalizations. Mm-hmm. Like, don't you hate it when people are like, well, Chihuahuas are really yappy and they can't be house trained. And you're
always
like,
that's not necessarily true. I'm fine with Nevis. You think a yappy, fine. You haven't met their mama. It's more yappy than the dog.
See, it's just diffusing as it goes down the line. So, yeah. So, I mean, two things is, and it's a good question, but I would say that I always look at the dog in front of me. How it got there isn't as important for fixing it, for rehabbing it and managing it, as identifying how severe it is.
Okay.
And we were talking about this earlier, the idea of, you know, when's the right time to do modest interventions and sort of natural things, which we both like.
Yeah.
And when do you really have to batten down and go, we need veterinary intervention?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the difference between the difference between someone who has generalized, even a person who has a little bit of anxiety and they might worry and get a stomach ache, but they can go to work, they're functional, they have relationships.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Versus another person who, you know, takes days to recover from something upsetting or isn't sleeping because of politics as they are, or things like that. Someone who's really their quality of life is diminished and they're not functioning or they're not recovering after an incident.
Yes.
Because it can generalize very quickly when a dog is that traumatized.
Makes sense.
I had my dog one time went and had we might have talked about this a long time ago. She had a really bad visit to the vet one time where it just didn't go well for her. She was very upset. And she was car phobic. For 6 months after trip to the vet, she had in her mind, we went there in a car and she's like, that's the problem. If I just stay out of the car or every time she got in the car, she'd just get hysterical again.
Oh, God.
And she gone back and forth to work with me for months. She had gone cross country in a car. So she had a lot of car time under her belt that in any other dog might have offset this.
Yeah.
But in her, it didn't. And that's where, when you talk about genetic things, I would look at her and go, she had a genetic predisposition to take in all fearful stimuli at a higher intensity than another dog might. I don't know any particular dog, I would say, but I would say, you know, than another dog.
Right.
Considering all the dogs I've had. Mm-hmm. My current dog, he gets afraid of some things, but he gets over it. He doesn't hold on to it, and he wouldn't develop that kind of phobia.
Mm-hmm.
Like she would. It would just take one occurrence, and she'd be like, I almost died. That can never happen again.
Yeah. Some dogs could be more sensitive, their ear on their sounds, and some of the...
Sometimes it sounds. Sometimes some are more sensitive to touch and handling. Yeah. Some it's about strangers.
Yes.
Like I could handle my dog and do anything to her, and she
just
wasn't
like we are.
Upset.
Just like we are. Totally.
Yeah, it's not that different, except mm-hmm. that when we ascribe their things to or our things to them, sometimes we think we can talk them out of it or something, and it just takes more because mm-hmm. they don't have the mechanism to understand they're not going to die.
Totally.
Like if someone gets in a plane, they logically know that the chances of the plane going down is statistically not that relevant, you know? But they can't stop the panic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think when we make those kind of corollaries with dogs, it helps us be a little more empathetic about what they're going through.
I think so, too. And I want to continue this conversation right now. However, we need to take station identification. So I am talking to Denise Herman, owner of, Empire of the Dog. I've also got Aiden Avez in here, who does everything dog. And we'll be back in about a minute and a half.
Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Whole Foods Market believes in seeking out local, fresh, and seasonal food, and in supporting local farmers, makers, and the community as a whole, economically and agriculturally. Whole Foods Market believes in food that is vivid and colorful, fresh and full of nutrients. Food that connects you to your body, the seasons, and to nature. Food that helps you do more, sleep better, and wake up happier. Found in over 400 locations throughout the United States, Whole Foods Market only sells food that meets their standards, which means no artificial colors, flavors, preservatives, or sweeteners, ever. Whole Foods Market believes in real food. Visit WholeFoodsMarket.com or download the Whole Foods Market app to learn more.
Hi, I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Rachel Jacobs.
And we're hosts of Ferment About It, a weekly journey of all things fermented on Heritage Radio Network.
Tune in on Mondays at 7 p.m. to hear about all things fermented, from sauerkraut to sourdough and all things between.
Support our show and all of Heritage Radio Network's programming.
Go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart to donate.
And we're back. I'm talking to Denise Herman and Aiden Avez all about generalized anxiety and phobia in dogs. Let's see, Denise, I have so many questions for you. I'm trying to sort this out here. I feel like in some cases, a lot of anxiety is due to diet and animals not getting enough exercise. What do you think about that?
I think you could make a case for that with things that are behavior problems that are nuisance type. Mm-hmm. But the question would be, why with a bad diet necessarily, or just not enough exercise, would the dog become frightened of things? Certainly you can be like, if they're tired, they won't notice as much stuff.
Right.
But you can't really, like, you know, I would use the thing with the person again on the plane. I'd be like, let's party all night and then put you on a plane. They're still going to freak out.
You're right.
If they were going to freak out on a plane, they're still going to freak out on a plane. I think with really mild cases, and mm-hmm. I think it's the same thing with the natural stuff. Like, I love things like the Thundershirt calming wrap, the L-theanine-based calming things, mm-hmm. and a lot of great stuff's going on right now with CBD oil.
Yeah, totally.
But for a lot of that, we're talking about moderate to low anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about the kind where dogs are clawing their way through doors and out windows and mm-hmm. self-mutilating mm-hmm. and, just really awful, awful stuff where they just can't be pacified.
A dog that, like, eats a couch,
Is that the same thing that's going on as a dog that's trying to break out of its house?
Depends what the precursor to eating the couch is.
Fair enough.
Is the dog home alone? Is it separation anxiety? Is the dog home alone bored? Did he, you know, will he eat actual food versus the couch?
Right.
You know, it's a fallacy that only separation anxious dogs chew things. They can just be chewing out of boredom, but they wouldn't necessarily chew around a doorway if they were bored.
Right.
And they wouldn't necessarily ignore a nice bone to chew something around a doorway if
right.
they weren't anxious. Or was the dog home alone and there was fireworks and did they just panic and knock the joint around and really try to escape? Because, again, if a dog's hearing those noises and they're in the house, they don't actually know that it's not coming from inside the house.
It's true.
Like, I mean, they can hear it, but they're not going to be like, it's going to be worse out there.
Yeah, yeah.
They're just thinking, I'm stuck here and no one's here, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And that sound's happening and I'm freaking out, whether it's thunder or fireworks or that sort of thing.
Makes sense.
So I think that diet and exercise can improve a lot of behavior problems, but not moderate to severe anxiety, phobia, that kind of stuff so much.
Okay.
If at all. It wouldn't be my first go-to.
Okay. One of the things that I think about, too, is that if you do have a dog that has anxiety, you know, a lot of times it's like anxiety winds up being kind of connected to excess energy, and it's not really the same thing. But so then you've got an animal who you're like, all right, I'm going to run this dog. I'm going to get this dog so he's going to calm down because he's so well exercised. Then you've got this dog who's like the bionic dog who's so fit.
Well, yeah, we've talked about that you're conditioning up a long-distance runner. And frankly, depending on how much exercise you're trying to give them, is even if it worked, even if it worked or was what you would want for that issue, is that sustainable?
That's a good point.
You know, can you get that dog that much exercise every day? Or, my God, it's a rainy day. What are we going to do?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I remember hearing a story about a woman or seeing video of a woman who she had trained her dogs to run next to her car. And she had these German shepherds and they would heel next to her car and she'd have to just drive around the cul-de-sac.
Oh, my God.
To tire them out. And again, that not sustainable. And you look like a crazy person. And there are better ways.
But going in that sense, what would you advise for someone who has a dog that has anxiety? How can they manage that? You know?
Well, I would want to look at what is the source of the anxiety. Mm-hmm. There can be so many things. You know, is it a sound, noise, other stuff going on? Is it separation? I mean, the big ones are probably sound, noise, strangers, and stranger anxiety is more like stranger fear because it only happens when there's a stranger there, mm-hmm. but the dogs can become aggressive.
Okay.
And the thing you want to avoid is thinking of that as a behavior problem where the dog can control it and you're trying to punish it out of them to suppress it, mm-hmm. Because it's long-term not a good effective strategy because you're going, oh, I have a ticking time bomb. I'm going to throw a blanket on it. Look, it's not ticking. Everything's great.
But for something, let's just say something general. What would be, you know, a nice tip for our listeners to have if they are going through something like that? Something that they can work at home as a startup, let's say.
One thing that it's not going to be probably the tipping point for mm-hmm. any anxiety, but one thing I advise everyone to do during a protocol of rehab for anxiety is to give the dog lots of food puzzle and chew outlets. So like the stuffed bones with the food in them stuffed and the Kongs with food or lunch meat, even shredded mm-hmm. up a little bit, because anything you can do where you're giving the dog a safe,
hollow bone. Maybe,
yep, exactly. Mm-hmm. The hollow bones, anything where you can give them a safe outlet where they're allowed to be a dog and they're using their brain and they're doing something that feels good. It's going to help to burn off some of that worrisome kind of hand wringing energy that they have a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean energy in the mystical sense, but I mean literally what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that you're giving them an outlet that's safe. Going here, let's do this, it's safe, and they can then have kind of, you know, their brain stimulated in a really positive way where it's not even a mixed bag. Because a dog is a little anxious about sounds outside, you tire them out walking, but a certain part of that's a very mixed bag for them.
Mm.
And they come in with the cortisol going a little bit and their adrenal glands going a little bit. And that stuff can compound over time mm-hmm. and really exhaust, you know, their nervous system a bit. So I like to do a supplement thing of let's do chewies, let's do puzzlies, because that that's a positive way to kind of build up your dog's sort of joie.
So in a very basic form, it will be like have a hollow bone or some, or a Kong available and just give it to your dog before you're leaving home, let's say. Give it to the dog and go. Mm-hmm. And when you come back, grab it. And you just give it to the dog when you're leaving. Let's say that, for example.
You can give it to them anytime for what I'm discussing. You can, mm-hmm. if it's about separation, then yes, it's even better to give it to them when they're there by themselves.
Yes.
But you can do this at any time during the day. So if your dog's just, say it's the day after the fireworks and your dog's like, oh, they're gone, but... you know, you can kind of snap them out of it a little quicker, giving them something positive to mm-hmm. do. And even in the city, I mean, it's hard for a dog in a city like New York or any big metropolitan area. It's just, it's chaotic. Mm-hmm. For dogs who like routine,
yeah.
outside is chaotic.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
giving them something reliable mm-hmm. that's positive is always a good thing.
I have seen that a lot of the dogs that live in the city and they've been there since they're puppies, they're so used to noise and sounds and strangers that they don't really bother.
Yes.
This is more to the dogs that are not accustomed to it, that comes to a new environment and they're totally freaked out. It's
throw them deep in the deep end. You know, there's this idea mm-hmm. of socializing them. You can only play fast and loose with that with a really young dog. Mm-hmm. Once a dog's really over 6, 7, 8 months old, you've got to be a little more introspective about how you're exposing them to things so that you don't go too far and then they have like the reverse reaction.
That's interesting, mm-hmm. too.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't just go, I'll just take my dog, yeah. you know, mm-hmm. to fireworks and he'll get over it. It's a more involved process than that. That's yeah. more of a traumatic experience that's likely to backfire and make them worse.
Totally. Terrible. Listen, I don't like it myself.
Yeah. We had a fire engine go by today and I was like, oh my God. Cover your ears. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Totally.
So that was a good question.
So... do you think that this is something for people that are dealing with anxiety and phobia in their dogs? Is this something to call it like you in for, like a trainer, or is this something to leave for the vet?
Well, I think that, again, it's, you know, it's case by case, but I would say start with a trainer. I mean, you can talk to your vet, but the fact is that if your vet, what your vet does is they can advise you a little, but they're not heavy into, you know, being able to finesse behavior issues.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that's true. And they're probably going to advise to use some medication that are not necessary.
It could be, you know, because you're mm-hmm. coming in with a problem, they may not be able to figure
the
out.
They know.
Yeah, exactly. That's totally. What they're there for, is to prescribe meds. Whereas if you go to a trainer, they can give you kind of the, let's start with this, and if it seems like it's more severe, then we can graduate up to you going back to your vet and talking to them. Because there are absolutely cases where the dogs have to have medicine.
Yeah.
They have to.
Yeah.
You know, or they're a danger to themselves, they're a danger to the house, their quality of life is, you know, in the can, it's not great.
Mm-hmm.
And there are absolutely times where the dogs need veterinary meds, and a good trainer can usually discern that for you after an amount of time. But if you want to, you know, only do it if necessary, obviously, a good trainer can start you through a process of, you know, less intervention to more intervention, speaking, you know, medically.
Well, I think, too, I mean, if you do have a dog like this, I think it'd be really smart to work with the trainer as well, because in order to learn how to diffuse all this stuff and get the dog to just kind of get more used to it. So if there are meds involved, I think the perfect solution would be trainer, and if meds are needed, meds.
Yeah, that is the perfect solution. Yeah. You know, it's just, you know, work up, but get somebody started. Because a lot of stuff, I actually go into a lot of cases for separation anxiety, and it's not usually even moderate to severe.
Really?
But they have.
I was going to ask you if you have a story of a case that you have worked.
Well, I have a lot of stories of cases.
Without mentioning the doggy name.
Yeah. I can't even remember half the names, but I know I did have one client, and I have a diagnostic that I do for separation anxiety so that I can roll in and already know where it is kind of on the spectrum or have an idea, because and get more work done, and they can do this at home before I even get there.
Nice.
And I had a client whose dog was eating through drywall.
Oh my
and,
God.
And had injured itself, like smashing out of a crate, like dragging itself through the crate door.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And I gave him the diagnostic to do, and the diagnostic, because you would think that you would look right at that and go, that's an extreme case. And for sure the behavior was extreme, but there are absolute diagnostic ways that you figure out if the problem itself is really severe. And I gave him the diagnostic and it fixed it.
Oh,
and
really?
That's an exceptionally good example of a bad, series of behaviors and not really actually a clinically bad case.
How long it takes for example, in that case,
that one was fixed before I went there.
You're kidding.
The diagnostic fixed it.
So it was something so simple that it was just a matter of knowing and paying attention to something that the dog needed.
Yeah. And sometimes it's just doing a cumulative approach. Like some people have, you know, you read online and they spot treat this and spot treat that, but it's hard to know how to commit, how long, how far, how deep to go. Mm-hmm. And when you have someone there guiding you, then they can tell you, you need to do all of these things at once.
Yeah.
And then you hit the tipping point where the dog starts to improve or gets better. Like I said, this was not a typical case.
Yes,
but it was a surprising one because the
it's good
the
for the doggy, but it's
so
not
bad.
Good for the business.
Yeah, I know. I've had people be like, "Well, I have a one lesson plan where I just call it a fix it session," and other people have been like, "Well, that how can that be good for business? And what? How can you fix?" I'm like, "I just do." People, you know, I don't train everything. So for some things, you know, not phobia so much because those need to happen. But other things, I'm just like, let's manage around this. Like a dog who's barking. I had a client whose dog's barking at chipmunks out in the patio.
Yes.
They've had an electric wire up to keep the chipmunks away.
Oh, my God.
I mean, they have done all kinds of crazy things. I'm like, can we just put contact paper on the lower half of the glass so the dog can't see the chipmunks? Problem solved.
Genius.
Yeah. So a lot of times dog training isn't training. It's just problem solving.
Yeah.
And people would like the path of least resistance. So I'll give them a couple options. We can train it. How many man hours do you have?
But it's a special talent. You need to be sensitive to the animal, to the people and the surroundings. So not everyone can, you know, can be so attentive to details as you are.
It's true.
Well, you're very sweet.
Well,
she's good.
I know.
She's really good, right?
That's very sweet.
No, but it's true. That's why you are the expert. That's why you can do what you do, because we will oversee things. Mm-hmm. And especially when you are in the situation, you're so overwhelmed for what is happening and looking for many ways to fix the situation that you don't see the solution is right in front of you.
Yeah.
So you need another person. And it's usually always said, you know, if you can afford going to a professional, please just do. Don't waste time. At the end, it's just a lot of waste of energy. And if you had gone to the professional since the beginning, you would have avoided all of these stories that you go through.
It's true.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, too, is, you know, there's a lot of times, like I grew up in a house where, you know, my family had dogs, and so it wasn't like the dog in the house was like the new dog. I mean, with generations of people with pets, you know. And if we had a dog, we had one dog that was just bananas, and it was a Vishla, and he just was, he didn't really have a lot of anxiety, but when he did, it was bad, and thunderstorms were horrible. I mean, this poor dog, it was just shaking and crying and in the corner and peeing himself and all sorts of stuff.
What's funny is that, you know, he would have made a terrible hunting dog.
I know, right?
He couldn't have handled the sound of a gunshot.
He was just like, I mean, this
poor dog.
Thank
God you got him. A hunter would have, you know, would have been like, this dog, I can't take it anywhere. He runs away.
Bang. Dog,
you know, so interestingly, you would think that maybe genetically, you know, those guys might be more prepared to handle things like that. But it's really still case by case.
It's a really good point. It's a really, really good point. And it's like, you know, my family had dogs forever. Everybody grown up with dogs. And so, like, when his anxiety started showing, it was kind of like, well, we know what to do because we've had dogs for a million years. And it's like, no,
what did they cookbook up? I'm curious to hear what happened.
I'm trying to remember. I was so young. I remember there was one time Jason got to hang out in the bathroom.
Yeah.
And that was pretty not good.
And Jason was the dog?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's the personal name. I'm thinking, why were you jumping from the dog to Jason?
Pretty different dog name.
He had the golden fleece.
I wish they would come up with headphones, like the noise canceling. You know, they have them on. You see the babies at concerts, and they have them on. I'm like, if only we could have
a
head thing, and the dog couldn't hear. But you know,
don't feed my creativity, please. I will be thinking now at home how to put headphones on the dog.
There you go.
Right?
It's like a helmet.
Oh my.
A helmet.
Give her 2 weeks, and she'll come up with something.
No.
Seriously.
There you go.
The dogs will have the headphones on next show.
Dude, that'd be so cool. Oh, my God.
Yeah, maybe it's like a special house that just makes white noise, like a mat that you train them to lay on, and it, like, envelops them with some sort of sound bath.
You know, it's funny because people always think that things are always greener on the other side.
No kidding, right?
Okay. So that goes to the situation with the dog. They don't know what's going on, that they always think that they can fix whatever. They can fix your dog, but they cannot fix their own dog.
Yeah, yeah, totally. It's like lots of advice on that kind of thing.
Well, I will say, though, I want to say really quickly in closing that people who have a dog that really, really is freaked out by thunderstorms or, you know, fireworks and noises, things where it's really terrible, there is hope. There are a lot of medications, actually, that are not bad for the dog that can help your dog to really relax. And I've read a lot of stories of dogs getting so much better.
The cannabis probably can work in that, no?
The what?
The cannabis oil?
It helps. It helps. Mm-hmm. I think with severe cases, it's still not enough, even though I'm a big fan of it. It's just not enough. Mm-hmm. But they've got some different things. And I would really encourage people to seek out a veterinarian if their dog is doing anything that seems that alarming to them, where the dog's really just a wreck or is destroying things, you know, when this happens or routinely. So there is help for this. You don't have to shut the dog away or just let them suffer for hours at a time.
That's cool. And so, well, for New York City and tri-state area people and all that, where are you? Where can everybody find you?
EmpireOfTheDog.com. That's our website. And we have Instagram, Empire the Dog. And we have Twitter, Empire the Dog. And we have Empire the Dog everywhere. Yeah, that's basically it. And so Brooklyn, Manhattan, Queens. I love Queens. Queens people, I love you. So any of those. Cool. And sometimes Baltimore, you know.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
You know, so you travel.
I do. Yeah, I try to travel. Florida soon. Florida.
Ooh. Empire of the Dog South.
Yeah, exactly.
Way south.
Snowbird. Empire of the Snowbird. I don't know.
Totally.
Not there yet.
I remember that when we're in the South, I called you.
Excellent. Excellent. I'll have a whole different host of problems there. It'll be thunderstorms all the time.
Oh, my God. All the time. Flooding.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Snakes. 5 seconds.
Snakes, yeah.
Five seconds thunderstorm, because it's like it rains, a storm for 3 seconds, and then suddenly it's a beautiful sun outside.
And that might be better for the dogs. I haven't dealt with that because I've been on this, you know, this part of the coast, but it might be that actually gets them over it better. That when puppies, here you have dogs who can go through a whole season, then they hit summer and they're 9 months old and they've never heard thunder.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But in, you know, in Florida, you've got it like all year long. So they're coming up and socializing up from puppies, ostensibly if you had them from a puppy, which you don't always. But even if they were in another home in Florida as a puppy or anywhere in the South where there were routine thunderstorms like that would be better for the average dog to get over it than just having 3 or 4 months of intense storms so intermittently.
That's a good point. And then, Ada, where can everybody find you to find out who is going to be doing my shows for the next 2 weeks?
Well, they can find me next Monday here at Animal Instinct.
Thank you.
Okay. And they can send us a message through Facebook to Heritage Radio and Animal Instinct.
Yep.
And then we are going to choose one member from your audience that is listening today to the show.
Cool.
We're going to invite them to come and see how the show is done.
Nice.
We're going to interview them and going to hear probably which have been their favorite shows from the ones that you have done through the year.
I'm so excited.
We'll do that. And then, so I'm very excited about that.
I am too. And that's going to be, that's basically for you New York folks or anyone that can be in Bushwick at 6 p.m. on a Monday.
Yes.
So if you're in Colorado, we do not have a budget to fly you out. This is not an all-expense-paid luxurious week in Bushwick or anything like that. I know! It's a bummer, right? It's such a drag.
But if you love New York City, it's the best season to come, so take advantage.
And if you haven't been
And you're going to be on Animal Instinct Radio.
I know! It's a big deal, right? You know?
Yeah.
And we're also in Roberta's, which is some of the best pizza in New York City, arguably in the U.S. And so, man, this stuff is great. And it's a really, really, it's a super cool place. And you should be in here. So if you
I'm lucky we can't smell it through the glass.
Oh my God, it's torture.
We can't. I can't smell it though through here, can you?
No.
I can't.
And I'm still not sick of seeing people eat it. You know what I mean? It's been like 3.5 years. I'm always like, ooh, pizza. It doesn't.
I'm going to show in the camera how the date table. Literally people can see it.
You're showing them the date table. That's the date table. We always look at that one and we go, that's the date table.
There have been breakups there. There have been engagements. There's been all kinds of things. It's never dull at this table, I'll tell you that. But so everybody else, thank you so much for listening, sincerely. I will be off the next 2 weeks. That will be the end of the season after that. And then we come back in September, so I will be all rested up and do a new season with you all. thank you again for listening. You can find me on Instagram at, where am I? Animal Instinct Radio, that's right. And also Brooklyn Celia, which is basically my personal account if you want to see what I do when I'm not here.
Isn't it abbreviated, though, BKLYN?
It is. See, this is why I don't do any marketing, because I suck. Yeah. Where else am I? There's an Animal Instinct Facebook page. To find that, do the / Animal Instinct 73. You can like that and see what I'm doing over the summer when I'm not here. Otherwise, tune in for Ada. She's awesome. Get in touch with her. Get in the studio for the free thing that she's doing in the cool interview. It'll be super fun.
Yes, and they're going to be able to watch today's episodes on Facebook and listen through the radio.
Yeah.
And then, so they cannot say that they didn't have a good chance to listen this episode today and have a chance to come. So
Ada's going to be my agent, I swear.
Well, I have the most important question.
Sure.
Which is, will the guest be able to hold mojito in their lap?
But sure, David. I'm sorry. You know what?
Secret mojito.
You have to hold mojito for the camera.
We have TV personality Mojito in the room.
Okay,
it's a chihuahua,
so
who you will see on the screen.
She's holding Mojito.
Mojito is very fancy.
He's
and
dressed as a little devil today.
Oh,
I thought it was appropriate.
It's fabulous. He's been on all kinds of TV shows. He's been in movies. This dog is a more successful actor than I have ever been in my life. And we're blessed to have him in the studio today. So for the rest of you guys, unfortunately, we need to go. But thanks again for listening. Sincerely, I know. It breaks my heart.
What is the song?
Wait, David, get on it.
Oh, my God.
I love my engineer. I love Heritage Radio. You guys are the best. Thank you so much. And I will be talking to you guys. I know. Standing O for Heritage
Radio. Have fun vacation, Celia.
Thank you.
Yes.
I will see you guys in I don't know how many weeks, but it'll be a bunch. So until then, take care. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Listeners, we want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, the French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.